Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about issues of the day from a biblical perspective, as well as highlights from interviews, conferences, and events. Here's Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. We're featuring remarks made by Dr. Brad Wilcox during the Illinois Family Institute's 2025 Marriage and Family Worldview Conference, hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. Dr. Wilcox serves as director of the National Marriage Project and professor of sociology at the University of Virginia. He's the author of several books, including Get Married, Why Americans Must Defy the Elites, Forge Strong Families, and Save Civilization.
I'm going to be focusing right now on sort of the impact of marriage on kids. And my subtitle for the book is that I'm talking about a couple of things. One is defying the elites. Two is forging strong families. And then three is saving civilization. And I'm going to touch on each of these three different themes in my talk about how much marriage matters for our kids. So as we kind of go into the first point, though, I want to just ask a question of the audience. You kind of just raise your hands here. How many of you have been taught to obey your elders? Just raise your hand. Okay, so the vast majority of folks here today. This afternoon, I'm going to tell you it's in time to, in a sense, disobey your elders here in the culture at large, right? It's time for us to think about defying the elites in our culture today, because when it comes to marriage and family, they've often been advancing messages that aren't good for the least of us, obviously for our children. And I'm going to begin by kind of telling you a story that kind of illustrates how this is playing out, both for an ordinary young man and then how it's kind of playing out too on a college campus in the state where I grew up in Connecticut. So when he was 8, after bouncing through 5 foster families in California, Rob Henderson finally landed in a family who wished to adopt him. At last, the dizzying turns around the family go-around seemed over, as did much of the misbehavior that followed in the wake of what seemed like a constant move from one family to another family for Rob. So prior to moving in with Luke and Elaine, his new adoptive parents, Rob had learned pickpocketing from older foster siblings. He tried to steal his third grade teacher's wallet right out of her purse at school and gotten into all sorts of other trouble. But after moving in with his adoptive parents, things took a turn for the better. I had, you know, a mom and a dad and a sister now, he recalls, adding that he appreciated the stability, the love and attention that they gave him. But 2 years later, around Christmas time, his world was turned upside down again as his adoptive parents sat him down for the talk. My mom and dad sat my sister and I down and said that they're getting divorced, Rob said to me. At the news, his 6-year-old sister got up to give a comforting hug to their parents, who were both clearly upset. But Rob stayed where he was across the room. He remembers feeling just emotionally cold at the prospect of taking another turn on the family go-round. And sure enough, the divorce ushered in a return of previous bad behavior. He ignored school assignments, he got into fights at recess, and as a teenager later on, he was pulled over for being drunk while driving. So even though he was exceedingly bright, Rob graduated high school with a 2.1 GPA, assumed that college was not in his future, and headed off to the Air Force to get a new start in life. But after spending a number of years in the Air Force, he actually managed to get into Yale University in Connecticut. And there he experienced a world like none that had been part of his previous life as a more working class kid in a kind of, you know, unstable family context. One day, for instance, Rob was in a sociology of childhood class, and the professor asked the class to report how many of them were raised by their birth parents. And in that class of 20 students at Yale, only Paul and one other student had not been raised by their own biological parents. This was a shock to me, finding out that 18 out of 20 students had been raised by their birth parents, Rob said. And as he talked to other Yale students about their lives, he discovered, quote, the typical student in this place, they had both of their parents. Again, this was not what he had experienced growing up in a working class community in California. However, he also discovered talking about this family issue in class at Yale was not easy. My sense of it was that no one wants to talk about family. And when the idea of family structure ever came up in any way, quote, there was always an effort to bring it back to poverty. That's because most of his fellow students at Yale didn't want to, quote, make value judgments about the family. So they retreated into ideas like, we just need to give people more money or give people economic opportunities. So Rob's experience both kind of growing up and taking classes at Yale teaches us, I think, two lessons. One is how much family structure matters for kids like Rob, but also how difficult it is for the elites to address the issue of family head on and to address it truthfully. And so when it comes to kind of elite thinking and discourse about marriage and family, what I argue in my book, In Get Married, is a kind of family diversity theory idea here, where elites want us to believe that what matters for our kids is love and money, not marriage. Okay, that's what really kind of makes a family. In this kind of account, all types of families are equally good for our kids. What matters, again, is just that kids have one or more loving parents who kind of give them affection and attention. And that's also kind of important, too, for, you know, for families to have just basically a threshold of money. And so for that reason, they tend to support, progressives tend to support generous public policies to kind of help give families a basic modicum of financial support. So again, the idea here is that marriage doesn't matter for our kids. What does matter for kids is love, understood kind of as affection and attention, and the requisite amount of money. And you kind of can see this being articulated by people like Philip Cohen at the University of Maryland, and also Pamela Jackson in Indiana. So she says, for instance, in terms of love being the thing, she says, all of our research points to the fact that it's the quality of the relationship that matters, and the handling of communication and conflict, and the number of people in the household is not really the key. So again, it's love, not marriage, that matter for our kids, provided that, of course, you have enough money. And so Philip Cohen says, if people grow up with single mothers who have adequate income, they do fine on average. What we find is they do have a lot of challenges from the lack of resources, but family structure per se is not as big a factor. So he's making a claim here, again, that what matters for our kids is more money than it is marriage, okay, in terms of what matters for our children. And then we've also kind of seen this perspective articulated in the pop culture with people like Katy Perry saying she doesn't need a dude to have kids in this comment to Rolling Stone. I'm sure you've seen similar comments from other celebrities as well. We have David Brooks, the New York Times columnist, actually writing a big piece in The Atlantic, a major American magazine, probably the most important magazine in America, saying that the nuclear family was a mistake, okay? So again, pundits, pop culture, mavens, and professors all kind of making the argument that what matters for our kids is not marriage, but money and love, understood in a certain kind of way. And they're relying upon a certain set of priors, you know, certain kinds of ideas about the priority of me before we, a kind of individualism in our culture. A certain kind of way of thinking about our society is driven by economic structures. And then also, and probably this is the most important point to make here, is kind of this idea that history is unfolding in a linear direction, okay? And that every kind of step we take down sort of the decades is a step in the direction of progress. Okay, so we kind of need to baptize and affirm every new kind of family form and relationship development that comes down to us from, you know, the media and from the academy, for instance. Unfortunately, this kind of perspective does dominate how our elites tend to think about and speak about and write about family life. And because college-educated liberals kind of dominate our key cultural institutions, like our universities and our public schools and our state capitals, oftentimes, at least somewhere like Illinois, liberal college-educated Americans who, again, kind of dominate the culture from the heights of the culture are the ones least likely today to think that kids are better off if they have two married parents. Again, that's because they think that it's really about love and money, not marriage, when it comes to the welfare of our kids. So what I'm encouraging us to do today is to defy the elites in the sense that we have to understand that their message on marriage and family is not good for our children. Okay, so where is the evidence on that score? What's my evidence about that? And so what I do in Get Married is kind of explain how much family structure matters for the welfare of our kids, and also kind of think very carefully about how much money matters for our kids versus an intact married family. Okay, and we're going to kind of just quickly go through some of the data here to get a sense of what this looks like empirically. We can begin, for instance, thinking about education. I would see a big concern for many of us. And I note, for instance, in my book, there's this thing at UVA called the Jefferson Scholarship, where they aim to get the most promising students from across the country, and actually indeed the world, to come to UVA, students who are high school seniors, who are leaders, scholars, and citizens in their world. And the folks they bring in, you know, more than 100 high school seniors come to UVA to compete for this from around the world every year, are diverse in many respects, coming from all over the world, from South America to South Africa. And the finalists are also racially and ethnically diverse as well. But in what way do you think these finalists who come to Charlottesville, Virginia to compete for these full merit-based scholarships, in what way do you think they're not diverse? The parents are married, okay? And so what I see when I look at the scholarship applications when I'm involved in the process is that about 80% of the kids are reporting that their parents live in the same place. Again, 80% of the applicants that I've looked at in the process are telling us that their parents live in the same home. They're coming from intact married households, the vast majority of them. Thinking of students like John, who is now in his late 20s, was a Jefferson Scholar majoring in economics at UVA, but who grew up in a strong and stable family that gave him kind of a leg up in the American meritocracy. Quote, "I always felt like I had people who were in my corner, who were on my team," said John, reflecting on the support that he got from his parents and close extended family in suburban Richmond, Virginia. Quote, "My family provided me with lots of support and pushed me academically, extracurricularly, and professionally," said John, who's the oldest of four boys. His dad, a lawyer, would help him prepare for his in-class presentations, giving him feedback on, quote, how to present and communicate in a very effective manner. Likewise, his mom, an accountant, quote, was always there checking all of our math homework to help us with that. His mom was also, he says, the family's organizational engine, making sure that John and his brothers ate dinner at home most nights, got back and forth to their extracurricular activities, and went to church as a family on Sundays. So no wonder that a kid like John has done so well academically and extracurricularly in terms of competing for this scholarship, and he's now doing well beyond that. And John is no outlier. What we see in the data is that kids who come from intact families way more likely to be graduating, for instance, from selective colleges like UVA or the University of Chicago locally or Stanford or Princeton or whatnot, compared to kids who are coming from other types of families. Just kind of a cross-sectional story here. And then in a multivariate statistical context, what we see is that kids who are hailing from intact families are 125% more likely today to be graduating from college. That's a big effect. And in the statistical data, family structure is more predictive of graduating from college than whether you come from a lower income or an upper income family. It's also important to note, just on the gender piece, that we're kind of seeing boys from non-intact families doing kind of the worst on a lot of different educational outcomes. So there's a kind of story here about money and gender that's also, I think, worth just being aware of. And then another thing that kind of is obviously very important is having any type of difficulty with the law, or especially landing in prison or in jail. And one of the things that Rob told me about kind of his kind of milieu in working class California was that he didn't know anyone in his immediate social circle who graduated from college. He was the real exception, but he had a couple of guy friends in his circle who landed in prison or in jail. And what we see in the data is that for young men today, there's a very kind of, I think, sobering statistic or set of statistics, really. And that is that for every non-intact family pattern or category, young men who are hailing from a non-intact family, this is the most striking statistic for me in my book, are more likely to land in prison or in jail than they are to graduate from college. And by contrast, young men who hail from an intact family are four times more likely to graduate from college than they are to spend any time in prison or in jail. There are real differences for women, but they're not quite as, I think, as provocative and powerful as sort of the story for boys or young men and prison. And so again, in a multivariate context, what we see is young men from non-intact families are about twice as likely to land in prison or jail by the time they hit their early 30s. We find again that family structure or marriage matters more than their family's money. And again, young men are the ones most likely to be affected by incarceration. So when things go south for kids, boys tend to kind of manifest that in a kind of more externalizing way, where they're getting in trouble in school or with the police or in some other kind of obvious sort of external fashion. They kind of act out, if you will, in the data. That's what we see. Whereas when young women are experiencing family problems, family breakdown, they're more likely to kind of internalize it, to be anxious or depressed or to engage in things like self-harm.
Dr. Brad Wilcox, during the Illinois Family Institute's 2025 Marriage and Family Worldview Conference, hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. More of his remarks from that event after this. Join Riley Gaines and the Illinois Family Institute for the Faith, Family, and Freedom Banquet, 7 p.m. Friday, November 7th at Denolfo's in Homer Glen. To reserve seats for this very special evening, go to illinoisfamily.org.
I do get called every name in the book, but what's scarier to me is not standing firm in the truth.
Riley Gaines, a 12-time All-American collegiate swimmer, praised by President Trump for her fight for fairness in women's sports. Like IFI, Riley is advancing truth.
It's actually compassionate to tell the truth. That's what love is.
An evening you don't want to miss. Riley Gaines and the Illinois Family Institute's Faith, Family, and Freedom Banquet, 7 p.m. Friday, November 7th at Denolfo's in Homer Glen. Act fast to reserve seats. Go to illinoisfamily.org, illinoisfamily.org.
Need somewhere to belong? Try here. We're socialites. Find us at socialites.blog. We aim to cultivate meaningful friendships and create places for people to come together face to face.
We do weekly group, Bible study groups, swing dancing. We even do bonfires on occasion.
We also connect churches via their YA groups in the Chicagoland area.
We want to be the answer to the question of, where do you even meet people anymore? Come find us at socialites.blog. Check out some of the events we got going or any of the groups that we host regularly.
Socialites.blog.
Thanks for joining Illinois Family Spotlight. We're highlighting remarks made by Dr. Brad Wilcox during the Illinois Family Institute's 2025 Marriage and Family Worldview Conference, hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. Dr. Wilcox serves as director of the National Marriage Project and professor of sociology at the University of Virginia. He's the author of several books, including Get Married, Why Americans Must Defy the Elites, Forge Strong Families, and Save Civilization.
So we've talked about how when it comes to incarceration and when it comes to educational outcomes, it looks like kind of the effects of family instability are bigger for boys and young men. But when we turn to kind of the emotional domain, we see the effects are bigger for young women and for girls. What I'm thinking of is that girls like Elizabeth Roberts or Liz in suburban D.C., she was doing pretty well in school and life until she turned 12. She had A's and B's in her middle school. She played soccer as a striker. She was involved in her church youth group at the Faith United Methodist Church. And she had her share of good friends from her neighborhood middle school. But all this changed on one March afternoon in 2016. Liz was outside doing yard work with her mother, her father, and brother. And her mom was not happy with the job her dad was doing, edging the bushes at the edge of their property. "I'm fed up with this," said her mom. "You never do what you're supposed to do, what I want you to do. I am done." Now, Liz knew that there had been tensions between her parents, but this was the first time her mother had made a comment this definitive. She was flabbergasted when her mom just packed up her belongings and left the family home that evening. And after her mom left, she left the family for good on that day, Liz's world collapsed. Her grades cratered, and her school counselor told her dad that she's smart, quote, but she just doesn't do any work, and she doesn't focus. Liz suffered panic attacks at school. Her mood darkened, and so did her clothes, as she began to dress emo. That's when I heard about this term, emo. And dressing emo meant wearing dark hoodies, dark makeup, dyed hair combed to partially cover her face, and tons of piercings. And Liz also engaged in self-harm, cutting herself on her arms. Before this change in her appearance, Liz had resembled her mom. But after she adopted the emo style, Liz looked nothing like her mom. That was the point. "I hate my mom," said Liz. "She left me and she didn't protect me." And in her pain, she drifted into YouTube videos and online chat groups. She became more depressed and anxious. And she's currently seeing a female therapist who's trying to model a healthy relationship with her to rebuild her capacity to be intimate, vulnerable, and connect others. And unfortunately right now, Liz's therapist is her primary adult attachment therapist. But this kind of gives you a sense of how when kind of families break down, kids can bear a heavy burden. And the case on the kind of the emotional side, it's often the girls who are most affected. So we see, for instance, when it comes to Liz's story and beyond her story, that sadness is more common for kids whose parents have parted ways, whereas kids whose parents are still together are less likely to be sad a lot of the time, or depressed, if you will. It's young women who are most likely to be kind of registering some kind of negative outcome. And then statistically, what we see is that kids from non-attached families are about 53% more likely to be depressed. And again, family structure matters more than money for predicting depression among kids. And again, this is kind of most visible for women and girls. So I've given you just three important outcomes: depression, incarceration, and education, just to kind of give you a sense of what the data tell us about the importance of kids having married, intact families in their corner. So what is it about marriage that matters for our kids today? What are kind of the factors that we can kind of really focus on? And there's a lot that one could say, but I'm just going to quickly make this point. And that is that progressives who basically argue that the family diversity theory is the way to think about what matters for kids don't appreciate that actually love and money are more likely to be found in intact married families, okay? So kids in intact married families tend to get more affection and more attention from their parents. Obviously, there's more stability there as well. They get more consistent discipline as well. And when it comes to money, for instance, you typically have today two incomes or economies of scale and economic stability that bring more money into the home as well. And so again, progressives think that what matters for kids is love and money, but they don't appreciate that for the average kid across the country, they're more likely to get those two key ingredients in an intact married family, that these two things are more likely to head kids' ways in ways that allow them to thrive. So the second point here is that we need to forge strong families for the sake of our kids, recognizing that kids who are raised in stable married families are more likely to get the love and the money that they need to be flourishing in an increasingly competitive world. That's point number two about kind of marriage and family and kids. And the third point this afternoon is about how this matters for our civilization. Again, what do we think is the strongest when it comes to our civilization? What is the sort of strongest predictor of human happiness? Yes, yeah, so stable married families is kind of the strongest predictor of human happiness, kind of at scale, basically. And what's the strongest predictor, would you guess, of child poverty in states across the U.S.? The share of married parent families. So I did a study with a colleague, Robert Lerman, and with Joseph Price, and we looked at, you know, all 50 states over a number of different years and found that as you kind of looked at the different factors that would account for why different states had more or less child poverty, again, the number one factor that we found in our models was the share of married parent families in a given state. And then again, what's the strongest predictor of economic mobility for poor kids? The way they measure it in this Harvard study was a share of two-parent families. Kind of just shows us basically, again, that what's happening in our families matters a lot for our kids and for their future and for the emotional well-being of their communities as well. So the third point here then is that as the family goes, so goes the civilization. That's kind of the takeaway for the civilizational point here at the end. Now, as I kind of make all these points, I want to be also clear that I'm not telling us today, we see a lot of complexity out there in families today. So I'm not saying that being raised in a single parent family, for instance, is a death sentence. We know that many kids from non-intact families end up doing well on any number of different outcomes. I was raised by a single mom, and both my sister and I are doing, you know, reasonably well right now as married parents, for instance. So we need to be kind of clear that we're not saying that there is a horrible outcome awaiting every kid who's raised in a single parent or some kind of non-intact family. But it's also the case, too, that on average, kids are much more likely to be flourishing when they're raised by their own married parents. And our communities are much stronger when married parent families kind of dominate the communal landscape, when they are really core to our civilization, both writ large in the country at large, and then also in our communities across America. So in this regard, this is the kind of point that I think we actually see former President Obama making a good point. And the point is this, that stable marriage gives children an unparalleled level of financial, emotional, and social support from their own parents and connects them to their fathers in ways that the alternatives typically do not. So in his famous Father's Day speech from 2008, not too far from here in Chicago, in the midst of his first successful campaign for the presidency, Barack Obama put it well. He said, "Of all the rocks upon which we build our lives, we're reminded today that family is the most important." Of course, we're thinking here about the intact married parent family as well as kind of the rock. And as I kind of conclude this talk, I want to just also acknowledge that there's clearly a real challenge facing this state. The share of kids being raised in married parent families in Illinois has gone from 83% in 1970 to about 63% today. So we've kind of been on a long slide for the last, you know, really 54 years. And so we have our kind of work cut out for us here in this state to kind of turn things in a better direction here. Nevertheless, if we wish to renew the civilization here, in the land of Lincoln, we must defy the elites, forge strong families, and make marriage the rock upon which Illinois' families are built. So thank you.
Dr. Brad Wilcox, during the Illinois Family Institute's 2025 Marriage and Family Worldview Conference, hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. Our thanks to Pastor Mark Moore and his leadership team for allowing us to be there. You can view Dr. Wilcox's Worldview Conference presentations on the IFI YouTube channel. Be sure to join Riley Gaines and the Illinois Family Institute for the Faith, Family, and Freedom Banquet, Friday night, November 7th at Denolfo's in Homer Glen. Reserve seats by clicking events at illinoisfamily.org or call 708-781-9328. We would love to see you there. Please support the work of the Illinois Family Institute. All donations are tax deductible. And tell your family and friends about Illinois Family Spotlight. Until next time, stay healthy, stay active, and God bless.
For more information about Illinois Family Spotlight, visit ifiaction.org. And to email questions and comments, do so at feedback@ifiaction.org.